This is WABF. It's time now for the Conservative Watchdog Weekly News Review with Dr. Lou Campominosi, president of the Common Sense Campaign and adjunct professor of political science at Spring Hill College. This program is brought to you by Spriggs Enterprises, which includes the Shell gas stations in Daphne and the one in Malbus with the state-of-the-art car wash. And good morning, Dr. Lou.
Well, good morning, Laurie. It's not actually such a good morning, given what we've been through this whole past week. You know, you and I are both old enough to remember Saigon and what happened with all that, okay? I'm a little bit older, obviously, but the recollection of Saigon is something that just brings back so many traumatic, you know, visions of why this happened, what happened, and all the rest of it. It caused a major turmoil within the country and led to what was called the Vietnam Syndrome, okay, which was really a paralysis in terms of acting in foreign affairs because we have gotten burned so badly in Vietnam. And the lessons that came out of that, particularly from the Democratic Party's foreign policy establishment, was that the use of force was of no real utility in foreign affairs. Now, that didn't make any difference to what was going on, you know, with Gerald Ford, but it did make a difference when you had someone like Jimmy Carter come to power in 1976. The Carter approach was essentially a rejection of dealing with the kinds of bad guys who were out there at the time. Sure, the communist Soviets got it. But notice what happened. When the Soviet Union invaded Afghanistan in 1979, Carter basically said, I misunderstood or misrepresented the Soviet intentions. And so it led him then to create, you know, a rapid deployment force for the Middle East, which suggested that the whole foundation of post-Vietnam foreign policy, which essentially said, hey, economic policy is more important than force, because look at the disaster of Vietnam. So we're strong economically. Let's make sure that in our relations, that's probably going to be our first guess. But
Hold on. Yes. Just hang on one second.
Okay. Essentially, what happened was Carter had to go back to using a degree of power to make sure that American interests were taken care of. So what we're having at this point now is someone like Biden who essentially has walked out on the use of force. Look at what he has done as vice president and what he's done today. And I'll develop this more down the road. But this morning, I wanted to talk a little bit about that. But I also want to talk about another issue that's going on in Baldwin County. And it has to do with this, the use of masks in the schools, a mandate that was put on by Eddie Tyler after he had already said no to masks. And a few days later, he flip-flopped on it, created a major firestorm. People were all upset. Parents were mad. Then at one of their meetings, they didn't even get a chance to say anything because they shut down the meeting and asked the police to move people out. Common Sense Campaign kind of jumped into this, and we basically said, well, we're going to have a town hall meeting, and we're going to talk about all this stuff. And then we asked the Board of Education to hold a, quote, special meeting, okay? That special meeting was held last Thursday, the 19th. And so what I wanted to do this morning was talk about that special meeting and the whole question of the pandemic related to mask mandate with Kevin Spriggs, who is a close follower of all of this. And then at the second part of the show, I've asked Lieutenant Commander D. Cox to come on because he was our keynote speaker at the Thursday meeting. I wanted him to relate some of those things about his thoughts on that, and then let him speak to you about the fact that he's a combat veteran in Afghanistan, and as an intelligence officer, I wanted him to kind of frame this in the big picture of what this is all going to do to our counterterror policy throughout the world. So let's start now with Kevin. Kevin, welcome this morning.
Thanks.
How's everything going up there at Shell Mabus?
Well, everything's good. The tourists have calmed down now, and
all right.
We're kind of back to local traffic.
Well, good. All right, so let's kind of I introduce this in terms of this whole mask business. First of all, I know that you watched the special meeting. Okay, so what is your sense of how that meeting went and the degree to which the message that the people who are against the mask, were they able to make a presentation that made sense, and do you think it will have an impact down the road?
Yes, I think that the way the meeting was conducted was very fair in that that they had speakers lined up for that, you know, apparently for, you know, the children wearing the mask, and then mm-hmm. they had, you know, equal and fair time, I felt like, for the parents to express their concerns. And what you can conclude is that the decision was made based on not so much science and, you know, the research data that was available, but it looked to me like it was just, hey, we need to do something. And based on the panic of the doctors, which I really have a lot of empathy for those guys having to go through this, but nevertheless, when you make a policy, I think it's important to weigh the positives and the negatives of anything you're going to do, especially when it comes to how it may affect the children.
Yeah, exactly. And, I mean, on that front, it seemed to me that the doctors and their supporters just gave an emotional response, as sort of you suggested. Well, we got to do something. But if that something takes you into the realm of harming the children over the use of masks, it seems like there would have been some sort of a recognition of that, and yet there was no recognition of it on their side. Yet we had at least two speakers who spoke about the negative effects of these masks. So I guess the real question is, if the spike in the Delta variant does not recede significantly, then the masks are going to stay. So then what is your sense of where we are with the Delta variant and the pandemic at this point? Have you had a chance to see the latest dashboard results?
Well, looking at the dashboard, it does look like we're starting to crest over, but, you know, this thing is really volatile in that. But we've seen this last summer, too, when we had a surge in travel, 4th of July, Memorial Day. And if there's one thing that tends to flare up the coronavirus infection rate, it is travel. And I can't tell you how many people I've talked to anecdotally that said, you know, oh, I got COVID. And I say, well, how do you think you caught it? Well, we went to visit so-and-so up in Arkansas or in Louisiana or somewhere like that. And I guess what happens is when you travel, you expose yourself to a lot of new and potential infectious vectors, and that tends to cause the cases to flare up. And this Delta variant, it's not so much different than the original coronavirus, but the exception that the person that is infected can, you know, the viral load that person creates is many, many, many times higher than the original variants that we saw last year. So in other words, you know, by having so much more concentrated virus around, does make it far easier to get infected.
Yeah, I mean, the transmission rate is higher. It spreads easier. Okay,
absolutely, but you know, the problem, you know, with the school board and what I was most disappointed about with the meeting was that there is a growing body of credible research evidence out there that mask wearing is potentially harmful to maybe not all kids, but some kids. And there was no acknowledgement of that by the school board. No, you know, especially like when they had the panel of doctors up there, why not question those doctors of, you know, hey, how about this? Is this a potential harm to the kids? What do you see? You know, can kids get infected from other things that they may collect on the mask? Is it proper to wear the same mask all day long?
Yeah.
Oh, you know, there was no discussion of that part. It was just like, well, we're just going, you know, we got so many coronavirus infections, we got to wear a mask, we got to wear a mask, and not to acknowledge that, hey, maybe, you know, and not in all circumstances is this the best thing to do.
Well, you know, I think that the board said that they were going to review the mask policy after the Labor Day. So it seems incumbent upon us to push forward all of that mask information, the problems with the mask wearing for children, push that harder in front of these board members and make the case as strongly as we can to at least try to get them past this idea, oh, we got to do something. And they got there last year, April to May, and I think, you know, Commander Cox gave them a good rundown on all the good things they did back in April and May when they took the masks away. So maybe we can just kind of use that as a segue into a more enlightened discussion right now and see if they'll open up their minds to the possibility that wearing the mask is not such a good thing for the kids.
Well, yeah, absolutely, and it needs to be looked at from both sides. It's just like this vaccine debate. You know, I've heard people on TV, oh, take the vaccine, there's no risk. Well, when you tell the public there's no risk, you're lying to the public because, of course, there's some risk.
Right.
You know, and it's much better to be credible about it. Yeah, there's risk, but look, getting sick from coronavirus is also a risk, and then, you know, present it in a logical fashion so that people can think, okay, this is what I want to do for myself, as opposed to just saying, oh, well, you know, there's no risk. Go ahead and take the shot. Well, when you come out and you mislead, just like the president misled us on the deal in Afghanistan, now guess what? Nobody trusts you. How about that?
Yeah, exactly. And that's where we are with this. And to tell you the truth, the risk of the vaccines, I mean, I've heard that there were 5,000 people who have died of it. And we know that flu vaccines, when they're put out, I know for a fact that I think it was 2016 or 2017, the flu vaccine that came out killed about 50 people. They immediately pulled it. You know, they're not pulling this. I understand why they're not pulling it, because the risk of the rest of the population getting COVID overwhelms the possibility that 5,000 are dead. I got that. But on the other hand,
right.
It seems
we shouldn't, but we should communicate that to the public and not say, oh, there's no risk. Of course there's risk.
Exactly.
And the same thing with the school board evaluating the mask policy. Oh, well, it won't hurt them. Just let them do it. It's only for 2 or 3 weeks or whatever. But you never discussed or never talked about or even acknowledged that this body of research is growing that, you know, math in a school environment, you know, all tools don't work in all situations. A mask in a surgical room where you're having a procedure for an hour and a half, that's
yeah.
not different than being a mask running around all day with a kid for 8 hours worth of class and outside, inside.
Yeah.
You know, I just think that we've got to make decisions logically, and I feel like I feel really terrible. I'm glad I'm not a physician right now, because I don't know if I could handle that kind of pressure of dealing with this overload that they're undergoing.
Yeah.
But we have to be careful not to let the, you know, the emotional and the stress be the decision making. We need to stick with the science, the technology, and have logical and rational discussions.
Okay. Well, Kevin, thank you so much for your time this morning. I've got Commander Cox coming on, and we'll talk a little bit more about this in Afghanistan. So, but we're going to follow this up and make sure this Board of Education gets the right straight. Thanks again. Appreciate your time.
All right. Thank you.
Bye-bye. Well, I mean, you heard Kevin Spriggs, and I think that the whole issue of how the decision-making process has been skewed to an emotional level rather than using science and fact is something that we can address, and I think that we've laid the predicate for addressing it. And my next guest is going to talk a little bit about that. Commander Cox, are you on the line?
Not yet. He needs to call back, yes.
Oh, okay. Well, sorry, Deke. I'll have to welcome you again. So, but here's the thing, folks. If the decision-making process is not going to include a fact-based, science-based issue, then it seems to me that what is going to end up happening is that you're going to lose the public as well as where we are with all this. Hang on one second. I've got to take a minute here. That's his number, 540.
Okay,
we're going to try to get back in touch with Commander Cox. So, I mean, once again, we shoot ourselves in the foot with the vaccines because we say, well, there's no risk here. That's not the case. The really sad thing about the whole vaccine discussion, though, is that I've been working with doctors in North Alabama, and they have been treating their patients with hydroxychloroquine and ivermectin. And I always get that word wrong. But the bottom line is that there are alternatives to the vaccine. And it just seems to me that, you know, that is a major push that we need to make so that our politicians will do something along the lines of being in the ballpark when it comes to getting people who need help something other than the vaccine. And the remedy is there. That's the crime in all of this. So I understand from Laurie, my faithful partner here, that, yes, we now have Lieutenant Commander Cox on the line. Good
yes,
morning, Deke.
Hey, good morning, Dr. Lou. How are you?
Well, I'm doing better now that I've got you on the phone. I'll tell you that. I was going to have to, you know, stretch my world a little bit and cover this if you weren't going to be able to get on. But at any rate, I know technological difficulties there are always a problem. So, Deke, I just finished with Kevin Spriggs, and I know that I asked you to come on and talk about Afghanistan as a combat veteran in Afghanistan. I think people need to hear your take on what happened there and what we can do. But before we get into that discussion, did you have a chance to listen to what Kevin and I were saying just a little while ago about the mask mandate?
No, unfortunately, I was on another call.
Okay. Well, basically, you know, our take on this is that the board made a decision based on emotion. They got to do something rather than the science and the facts. So can you just give us a quick summary of your sense of that decision-making process and why you think it was wrong?
Sure. So regarding the mask mandate, you know, the political aversion that we saw at the board meeting on Thursday evening was, you know, it was just symptomatic. You know, they had the thing completely front-loaded and stacked against the folks who were there to speak out against the mask mandate. Yeah, they were happy to listen to most of what we had to say, but then a number of our speakers were gaveled off the podium, you know, while, you know, people who were there to speak for the mask mandate were given all yeah. kinds of extra license
yeah,
to stand
exactly.
there and continue speaking. And so, you know, there's that's always an indicator of a bias, and, you know, people are looking for confirmation bias. They want to hear what they want to hear, and I think that, you know, that was evident on Thursday. But more importantly, Lou, when we see the email come out from Eddie Tyler yesterday, where, you know, they clearly are moving their position, you know, more towards, you know, some of the things that we were asking for, at least, you know, publicly he's messaging that you know, that they're taking more of these things into consideration, you know, the harmful impacts of masking, or, you know, when we might be able to have them off, right? There's been another study that came to light this weekend, and it's interesting that it came out of Georgia, and it was a
a long study of 90,000 students in Georgia schools by the CDC in November, December of last year. And, you know, what was interesting is that they found no statistical correlation between, wearing masks and incidence of COVID disease. And so, you know, there's a lot that came out in that study, but
right.
We had that straight from the CDC, and, you know, and yet that study did not even get referenced, you know, during this past week's discussion. And so we'll be bringing that up with the board, of course, but, you know, back to your question about the political, you know, the political discussion and just about how, you know, they seem to be erring certainly on the side of caution, way too much and probably relying too much on, input exclusively from the medical community, which we've already outlined clearly, have conflicts of interest, you know.
Right.
And it's just an interesting, we're at an interesting point right now where the conversation in America, you know, has gotten quite heated politically. And, you know, here in Baldwin, the statistics I think that we presented Thursday offer, you know, a lot of compelling evidence about why, you know, why masks clearly don't work. And when you look at Sweden, for instance, you know, Sweden or Ireland and throughout right. Scandinavia and several other countries in Europe, you know, we only mentioned Sweden and Ireland during the board meeting, but, you know, they're doing better than we are. They have no mask mandate. And in places like Sweden and Switzerland and Ireland, you know, they've had their kids in schools with no masks. And again, their performance on COVID, as far as infections and the death rate, have exceeded ours. So right. There's a lesson there.
Okay. Well, Deke, I know that we're going to follow up on this, and I'll have you back on at the right time. But let's transition to this whole thing with Afghanistan. And I know that, you know, as a combat veteran, you know, you must have had some thoughts about what you were watching on TV. Why don't you share that with the audience, and then we'll ask some specific questions concerning the impact of all this as we go through this debacle of a withdrawal.
Sure. It, you know, I've been thinking a lot about this, I think, like most veterans and certainly those of us who served over there. And, you know, the sacrifice was real. You know, people need to understand that, you know, we went over there for a reason, and that was to deny Al-Qaeda terrorists a safe haven in the wake of the 9/11 attacks. And, you know, we did that. That was mission accomplished there. But, you know, that's a very difficult place to operate. And even today, you know, and the Department of Defense acknowledged over the weekend that, yes, indeed, there are still elements of Al-Qaeda and ISIS operating within Afghanistan, you know, and certainly supported by the Taliban. And so there are deep misgivings about the way that, you know, basically we're operating without a cohesive strategy over there. You know, the tactical implementation by the Marines who are there on the ground and the other joint forces who are putting together a NEO, absent a large overarching strategic plan that works. They're, of course, they're going to do the best that they can, but, you know, where we are right now, this did not need to happen. It's been real painful to watch, you know, these people who, a whole generation of Afghans who, you know, many of them, certainly around some of the metropolitan areas, you know, gave their, you know, last 20 years of their service to the United States of America, and we're just not doing right by them, and certainly not by U.S. citizens and contractors and our NATO partners who have other people at risk who were there also supporting the mission, whether it was through contracting or education or, you know, other types of support. But, you know, it's a mess, and it speaks strongly to a failure by this administration from top to bottom, you know, to just not have accepted a cohesive plan that was put forward by any number of agencies, you know, under their purview. And it just defies logic and explanation, Dr. Liu.
Yeah. Well, I think that, you know, we're dealing with it. So the next question for me is, You know, we've heard Biden, and again, this is part of this counterterrorism approach that I think remains an important part of whatever we're doing. So the question that's out there now is, Biden says that we can have, over the horizon attacks on any kind of, bases that spring up, whether it's Al-Qaeda, ISIS, or whoever, coming out of Afghanistan. What's your sense of that, and what is your sense of what we've lost from an intelligence standpoint by just pulling out without really thinking through the strategic necessity of maintaining something there? What's your sense of it?
Sure. There are two ready comments, and one is that this weekend we had spokesmen for the intelligence community and this administration confirm that the U.S. has moved all of our intelligence assets out of Afghanistan. So that's the first thing that has happened, and that right there is not good. You've got to have visibility on what your adversary is doing. And to your comment about, the administration's comments about, over the horizon targeting and such, we've been there before, and so basically what they've done is they've set the clock back to, 1990s, and the specific example I would offer is, the foolish advisement of General Wesley Clark, as NATO commander in the Balkans in the late 90s, where he thought that he could just bomb the Serbs back to the Stone Age and, from 30,000 feet, and that they would get the message and come right to the negotiating table. And in military circles, as you're aware, that it was laughable then, and it continues to be laughable today because air power does have limitations. It's extremely effective and useful in certain contexts, but you cannot win a war, and certainly not in a place like Afghanistan, hope to have any kind of measurable effect over the long term, over right. Your adversary's strategy or to shape their strategy or to compel them, to come to you in dialogue, which frankly, a lot of times it's lost, but that is the purpose of war, is to compel your adversary to come to you on more reasonable terms. And so that's not going to happen here. Using that example with Wesley Clark, is the most immediate one that comes to mind.
Right. Well, let me ask you this. We've got just a couple of minutes left. If you were advising Biden, what would you be telling him right now?
Well, he's got to get back in there with a stronger force to extract U.S. citizens, our allies, to support our allies. We've seen interesting movements over the weekend where the French and the Germans, the Dutch, have moved out from the perimeter at Kabul and other places and gone and gotten their citizens. We also effected a similar evacuation of a hotel. I think it was 169 U.S. citizens out of a hotel with a Chinook. You could put in a larger ground force and be able to move around, but the first thing you've got to do is you've got to telegraph strength. You've got to send the message to the Taliban that if they even so much as lay a finger on an American, that there will be very severe and immediate repercussions. And they would believe that right now. With this particular administration, I'm not so sure how much stock they would put into that until it was honored, But the other part is that I think we really, what I would advise is that we need to take a hard look at putting, an anti-terror force, on the ground over there. It's very similar to what we did in northern Iraq as a buffer between the Iraqi government and the Kurds and ISIS, and to buy time and to kind of stabilize the front lines until those local governments and militaries could effect a defeat, a comprehensive defeat of ISIS. In Afghanistan, you know, it would be a little more complex just because of the terrain. But I think that, you know, putting an anti-terror force there with air power, you know, is doable. And, you know, the Taliban, you know, deal with them as necessary. But, you know, that the horses have kind of left the barn on that at this point. And, you know, going back in there would require a little more of a heavier approach. You know, if we don't do anything, the consequences, we're going to be living with, you know, 1990s Afghanistan all over again, which is Taliban in charge, terror reigns, and just terrible price being paid by the region and certainly the citizens
right
there. And then, you know, how much longer before the heroin trade, you know, jumps back, you know, to horrendous levels, you know, and other, you know, detrimental aspects of what could come out of Afghanistan.
Well, Deke, thank you so much for your time and your, you know, willingness to share this with us. I think that, you know, the Vietnam veterans that I served with, you know, got through all of this, but the price that the country has paid, both from the Vietnam side to this side here with Afghanistan and what's going on, it seems to me it raises a distinct problem in terms of, you know, this issue of, okay, they're going to put us in there, they want us to do everything we can do, and then we're not going to see it through. You know, those kinds of credibility questions have been raised before, and we're not going to, you know, end that story here, but it certainly seems to me that the big questions have got to be faced along with some other issues about undermining the military through critical race theory. But as we go forward, it seems to me the veterans from your generation have got to speak up. The good thing about your generation is that you didn't have to live through what the Vietnam veterans came back, having dog feces and things like that thrown at them, being called baby killers and all like that. This was different. But what they've done in terms of walking out on the sacrifices you all made is an outrage, and I think that they should pay a political price for it, and we will make them pay a political price for it down the road. Deke, thank you so much for what you do over here in Baldwin County. Really appreciate it. We'll take care and be in touch. Bye-bye. Okay. Well, you know, ending on a sober note. You know, Lori, it's sobering in terms of what they have unleashed here.
Yes.
Absolutely unnecessary. I mean, if they didn't want to follow the Trump plan, which seems to be the only thing that they do, is, hey, if Trump's got the border plan, forget that. We're going to do something different. If Trump wants to do energy independence, oh, can't do that. Let's shut down the pipeline. So you've got this situation where now we have we have essentially a hostage crisis in Afghanistan. Now, they said that they've gotten about 24,000 Americans out of there, out of the total number, and it's a guesstimate. You know, we've heard up to 40,000. But however this works itself out, it just seems to me that getting the hostages out and then getting the Afghan supporters out is a major task that if the Taliban decide that, enough's enough, we're not going to fool around with it, and if there is actual resistance to the Taliban in the northern areas, which I'm hearing is the case, then the Taliban are going to start running scared, and you know, they may not look like they're scared, but they don't want to have resistance. And of course, if we had a real CIA, we would have a resistance team up there doing that, organizing them and fighting them. But I mean, for me to even say that, I mean, think about this. We have lost 20 years. Unbelievable. So, folks, you know what? Buckle up your chin straps because it's bad and it's going to get worse with Biden and these radical Democrats, AOC, Tlaib, you know, Ilhan Omar, wonderful people.
Not to mention the terrorists now virtually have a red carpet to cross our borders.
Well, sure. They talked about 5,000 or so terrorist prisoners let go out of Bagram Air Force Base and others that have been unleashed. So you think these folks are going to just, you know, sit in Afghanistan? Oh, no. They will find a way to cross that Mexican border, just like MS-13 and everybody else. So, yeah, I tell you what, folks, it's they say interesting times to live. I'm kind of tired of interesting times at this point. You know, I'm ready for the golden years.
There you go.
You know, and they ain't coming. Nothing's there. So we're going to stay on the front lines. We're not giving this up, and we're going to go after these people, take back Congress, and kick Biden and Harris out. Amen.
Thank All you, right. Dr. Lou.
Yeah, thank you, Laura.
Thank
this
you.
Has been good today. I appreciate it. Y'all take care. God bless. Bye.
Good show. You've been listening to the Conservative Watchdog Weekly News Review with Dr. Lou Campbell, an OC president of the Common Sense Campaign and adjunct professor of political science at Spring Hill College. This program is brought to you by Spriggs Enterprises, featuring the Shell gas stations in Daphne and the Shell gas station in Melbus with a state-of-the-art car wash. You can hear the show later at WABF1480.com.